This podcast is brought to you by Stella Artois. Make every moment unforgettable with Stella Artois. Whether at home with a cozy dinner or dining out, Stella Artois adds a touch of sophistication to any occasion. Stella Artois, a taste worth more. Enjoy responsibly.
Welcome to What's Eric Eating, Culture Map's bi-weekly look at all things Houston bars and restaurants. I'm your host, Culture Map editor Eric Sandler. On today's show, I'll have a conversation with two people in the food world I think you'll want to hear from. Gentlemen, let me introduce you separately so people can hear your voices. He is the chef and founder of Rumi's Kitchen, Ali Mesgali. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on your show.
He is the co-owner of Rumi's Kitchen, Stephen Kaplan. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks so much, Eric. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for doing this. Ali, let me start with you. I mean, you're the founder, you're the chef. So tell me a little bit about your background. Like, what experiences kind of led you from being a cook to deciding to open the first Rumi's Kitchen in Atlanta?
I'll say it as quickly as I can. You know, moving to United States back in late 70s, revolution starts in Iran. Things didn't go too great for us over here. I had to start working, started working in Persian restaurants in LA as a server, well, as a busboy server, then in the kitchen, cook. You know, eventually moved my way to Atlanta and was working in some restaurants over here. In 2007, I was a chef and very small part owner of a Persian restaurant in Atlanta. I met my fiance and she gave me the idea that, hey, man, you're too good. You got to open your own place. And we opened the first Rumi's Kitchen in 2007. It was a very small 1,600 square feet with an 800 square feet patio. We emptied our credit card. No bank would give us loan to open the restaurant. So we emptied our credit card and opened the first Rumi's Kitchen.
All right. We will pick up that story momentarily. Stephen, let me just ask you the same question. How did you come to be involved with Rumi's Kitchen?
Well, when I was in college getting my master's degree, I worked at a restaurant down the street from that original Rumi's that Ali was talking about. And I met a girl in college and she turned out to be a server at that Rumi's Kitchen. And so I got to know Ali through coming to visit my girlfriend and eventually started working there. And we didn't really have any big growth plans at the time. But once I became a manager and the restaurant got more and more successful, eventually Ali offered me a partnership to grow the concept with him. And so when we opened our second location, that's when I became a partner.
Talk about kind of the early days of Rumi's Kitchen, because we know it, you know, as this very grand fine dining take on Persian cuisine. But what was Rumi's like in the beginning?
I'll tell you from the very beginning. I used to wake up in the morning, drive my fiance to work. We had one car. And then come to Rumi's Kitchen, oversee the construction. And when we opened, you know, we eventually got two cars. She used to come and host at night. I used to be there from 7 in the morning to about 11 midnight at night, basically doing everything in the kitchen, from cooking to ordering the wines. And, you know, those were the early days. Eventually, I guess when I met Steven and other people, we started growing. I mean, 6 months went, and this is a true story, 6 months went on, we ran out of money. As you know, opening a restaurant takes a little bit of a budget. My fiance had to give me her engagement ring to pawn it to keep the doors open. And then right around that there time, it's when the name got out and people started coming. But it wasn't easy. It wasn't what you come in and see today. It took a lot of hard work, a lot of hours, a lot of sweat.
I mean, Stephen, you were there for some of that. I mean, talk about this, the evolution of the restaurant, like from those kind of humble beginnings into the Rumi's Kitchen that we know in Houston.
There was a lot of screaming and a lot of yelling, a lot of passion. behind what Ali was doing. And I got the unique experience of being able to work for him as an employee long before I was his partner. When we became partners, what I tried to do was take all of that passion and that emotion and that dedication to excellence that he brought to the table, which is what made him scream and yell and what made him go crazy and cause all the stress, and turn that into a systematic way to operate a restaurant and take this vision and his idea. And how do we replicate that? How do we make that happen day in and day out, whether he's in the restaurant or not? And so that's what I would say in a philosophical way. What you see in Houston is the exact same thing that you would have seen, you know, 15, 20 years ago. It's just done in a little bit more elegant way.
Yeah. Ali, I mean, say a little bit about kind of how your Persian heritage and your time working at Persian restaurants in LA kind of influenced Rumi's Kitchen. Cause I mean, I've been to Persian restaurants in Houston, and you know, some of the dishes are like there's overlap in the dishes, but not in the aesthetics, not in the presentation. I mean, you've kind of elevated or refined some of those traditions at Rumi's.
Yeah, you know, one, you know, when I used to work in Persian restaurant in Los Angeles, I'm like, you know, at that time, majority of our clientele were Iranian, you know, Persian based, and I'm like, this food is great. People gotta know this food. Like, we gotta make this food popular. Let everybody know about it. And then I'm like, there's gotta be. So I just went and looked at the food. I'm like, okay, this is how we make it. How can we make it better? What ingredients can I use? Do we just use the regular cut of meat to make this stew, or do we use the choice prime? What different ingredient? Can we use a fresh ingredient to make this instead of the dry ingredients? And just looked at, deconstructed everything, put it back together with better, fresher ingredients, better plateware. And as the places got busier, you know, we started getting better. One thing we always tell our team, we never want to rest on our laurels. You know, I travel, or we still do it everywhere to just see what's the newest thing, what's the modest thing. How do we do that? You know, we don't want to just be like your mom or pop's Persian restaurant. And I wanted to show people what Persian culture is to the world. I mean, that was my dream. You know, there is not a bigger satisfaction when I see an Iranian person come to the restaurant with their American guests, and they have this sense of pride to show them this is what their country is about.
Yeah, and I've noticed that even among my Persian friends, you know, that I see on social media, they've been very enthusiastic about coming there, even though they're still going to some of the more, you know, humble or you know, family-owned mom-and-pop restaurants too. But you haven't alienated your Persian audience by any stretch of the imagination. It's not like the flavors aren't consistent with what Persians would recognize, at least as far as I can tell.
No, absolutely not. I mean, one of the biggest reasons I do that, it's a pride. I wanted to show this is what my country was all about before all this thing happened to it or stuff. This is what Persian Iran, if you ever watch it, pre-revolution videos, you see a whole different country. And that's what I try to do with the food. I just kind of show what Iran is about, not what you see on the news.
Right, right. I mean, obviously, most Americans, thinking about the way that Iran is portrayed in the media, it's not very flattering. But, you know, in a city as diverse as Houston or Atlanta, obviously, we all know, you know, people of Iranian heritage who've come here. And so we have some sense maybe that those are very different experiences, but maybe don't know as much about the food. So maybe just say a little bit about kind of creating a Persian restaurant that's more welcoming for people who aren't, you know, Persian, but want to experience those flavors.
You know, when you walk into a restaurant, not to a Persian restaurant, to any kind of restaurant, my belief is to transform people as they're going somewhere else. So whatever it's in their mind, they could just leave it outside the door as they walk inside and just enjoy their time, whether it's an anniversary, whether it's a birthday, whether it's just gathering with friends. We want to do that with a great wine list. Stephen is very good with that, with great cocktails. You know, it's a whole combination of all of that, with a great ambience and with the food. The food, of course, has always been my passion and the forefront of what a great experience is. with an open kitchen so people can see how they cook the food. We never want to cut corners in what we do. Again, Persian food, it's a pride. I mean, Stephen could tell you how passionate I am about the food and the pride and what it is of my culture.
Well, Stephen, he said it. I mean, Ali said it. So talk about what you've observed about his passion as this restaurant has evolved.
You know, as we've developed the concept, as it's been refined, as you say, you have to kind of distill down some of the core principles of what you do well. And one of the things that we did in Atlanta, because we don't have a huge Persian population there, it's a relatively small community, certainly not enough to make us as successful of a restaurant group in Atlanta as we are. We had to gear the concept, and Ali created this all, but we had to gear the concept towards teaching people how to eat the food and explaining the food to them and making it more experiential, not because we had some gimmick of making it experiential, but because in order to make it palatable to American people, you have to explain to them, you got to cut up the tomato and the rice and sprinkle the sumac on top. And this is what this word means. And this is why it's unique. And this is how it's prepared differently. And so while the food is traditional, we're presenting it in a way that is in an environment that's more familiar to the average American. And I don't mean white. I just mean American diner that's dining out at other restaurants. So they can relate to the experience more, and then they're able to easily transition to understand the food because they're in a comfortable environment. They understand the wine list. They understand the cocktails. The service follows standard procedures of dining, and you can go for a birthday. And, you know, look, I'm sure your mom or your grandma used to make steaks for dinner every once in a while, but that experience at home is very different than going to Papa's Brothers Steakhouse, right? It's not the same. And so while everyone is Persian people are familiar with the food, the way we're presenting it to them is supposed to be a very different way than they would experience it at home, because there's no way that our particular stew can taste like everyone's grandma's stew. It's got to taste like Rumi's, and it's going to taste that way. What our focus is making sure it tastes that way every time in every state that you go to every day.
Well, and you know, you mentioned the beverage component, but that is one of the things that kind of distinguishes Rumi's from some of these more traditional Persian restaurants, right? Since Muslims don't drink, you know, that adding that wine and cocktail component, you don't see that really in these smaller restaurants. So, you know, I do think that's kind of one way to kind of distinguish what you're doing and make it a little more approachable for people who don't have that background in the cuisine.
In that original location that Ali talked about, that opened in 2007, it was there from 2007 to 2012 where I started working. We didn't have a full bar. We only had beer and wine. It was a very minimal wine list. But when we moved that location in 2012 and to a larger space with a full bar, that's really when we realized the potential that the concept had. You know, having a cocktail program and a full back bar, it helped us really take the second generation, you know, take Rumi's to the second generation.
So obviously, you had that second location in Atlanta, you went to DC. How did you decide to come to Houston as the next market?
You know, I tell this, a lot of people in Houston ask that question when we're walking around talking to tables. So it's a common question I get. And I always tell people, I wish I could say we had some like really in-depth business plan that we were following and just stuck to it. But truth be told, we were shooting from the hip. You know, we're planning to expand further in the Northeast after opening DC, you know, do Maryland and Virginia and kind of build like a little hub of a couple of restaurants within, you know, 30, 40 minutes of each other. But because of the pandemic that happened, we decided the Northeast was too shut down. We didn't have a chance to establish ourselves up there yet, and we wanted to continue to grow. So we Houston had been on our radar. Ali and I got on a plane, flew to Houston November of 2020. Found a restaurant real estate broker, turned out to be a cool guy, took us to the development that we ended up signing a lease at, and it was a one visit, done deal, signed the lease, just kind of got lucky.
I mean, that's crazy. Like Gucci-Co was planned for there, but wasn't open yet.
Yeah.
But I guess if you drove around, right, if you went to, I don't know, if you went to Caracol or you went to Annie Cafe or you went to some of the neighbors, you would have been like, oh, like, Yeah, things aren't shut down here. People are, if you went to River Oaks District at all, people were out by then.
Yeah, it reminded us of Georgia. And so we felt comfortable there.
Yeah, what it took us 10 years in Atlanta, we did that in 1 year in Houston. What we did in it took us 10 years to do in sales in Atlanta. We did it our first year in Houston. That's how people of Houston has welcomed us.
Yeah, say a little more about kind of the first year of Roomies in Houston, because it does seem like people were excited about it from the very beginning.
I mean, I was beyond overblown. I mean, like the way just people would just come in and the way they would it was a great experience. I don't know if there's any words I could say. People would just come and I didn't even know how the word of mouth got out so quickly, so fast. Again, it took us 10 years for that to happen. Now we have a very small person community in Atlanta, so that's why it took a while. So I figured with a bigger person community, they would bring their American guests and friends. But somehow people were coming out of nowhere. It was very exciting. I mean, what do you have? What else, Steve, do you have to add to?
I mean, I think we certainly can credit our PR company doing a great job introducing us to the city, and we have some mutual friends that live in Atlanta and our restaurateurs here in Atlanta that, of course, told all their friends about it. But I mean, that's minimal in the scale of how large Houston is. But, I think our PR company did a great job letting people know that we're coming to the city. I mean, we always tell anytime we've never had a PR company in Atlanta or anywhere else. And so Houston was our first real experience, and they kept saying, what's a win for you? And we're like, if you can get them into the door, we know we can execute and we'll make them, raving fans, but we just need people to know we're here.
Yeah, and we do have some kind of fun. There are some fun, like Houston Atlanta ties. Obviously, Ford Fry grew up in Houston and
Sure.
has all that success in Atlanta that he then brought back with, State of Grace and La Lucha and all that. And of course, Chris Kinjo from MMA Sushi was in Atlanta for a long time before he came to Houston. So there's a little bit of symbiosis there.
We also learned that the location in Washington, D.C. is a very good marketing tool, being in the nation's capital. We have more people, and D.C. is our slowest location, but more people know about us from the Washington, D.C. location than they do from the Atlanta locations.
So I guess Ali, I mean, talk about, we've talked about kind of the concept, but like talk about the menu specifically. I mean, what are some of your favorite dishes, or what are the dishes you think that kind of distinguish Roomies from other Persian restaurants?
My favorite dishes, fesenjan, the pomegranate stewed with the duck. That's one of my favorite dishes. The way we serve the rice, with our we serve the rice individual serving for the stews with the tadik. Tadik is the crispy rice. That's what distinguishes us from the other Persian restaurant. That's one of my favorite dishes. The barak, the tenderloin kebab, that's not another one of my favorite food and dishes. Another favorite dishes of mine is the qaymeh. It's another one of the stew that's also served with individual tadik rice. And what I mean by tadik rice, on a regular plate, if you serve rice with a kebab, the individual, they're just like a crispy tadik rice that comes and gets served. Kashkabadamjan or the Mirza Qasimi, they're both eggplant dishes, they're appetizers. They're awesome. How do they distinguish from other Persian restaurants? I think we have our own flavor, our own niche on flavors of how we serve the food. It's different than any other Persian restaurants out of Atlanta. Now, there are other Persian restaurants in Atlanta that had opened after us that took a sous chef or a line cook or something that copied us. But we do have we distinct our food. It just tastes a little bit different the way we cook it and serve it and the way we put the ingredients together.
Yeah, and there's a little bit of a like, almost like a theatricality. Not that you're like slicing a bunch of stuff tableside or rolling carts through the dining room, but Stephen, I guess this is more your end, but like that, the service has always been like very warm, very welcoming, and obviously I know I'm a known quantity, so I sort of expect that, but even my friends who've been there without me, I know they've been. very enthusiastic about that part of the experience too.
Well, it's a constant struggle. I'm not struggle, but a constant battle that, you know, we're as picky and as adamant about giving great service as we are about the food. It's just part of the whole experience. I mean, Ali preaches that, you know, one thing in a restaurant is not what makes it successful. It's the thousands of little details. And so, you know, I think we do a good job of hiring. We do a good job of vetting staff and knowing what type of staff fit well in our restaurant that can deliver the type of experience we want. And then we are very specific about certain things that have to happen during the dining experience, but how they happen is not set in stone so that it can feel genuine and warm. And that's one of the most critical pieces is you have to talk about this, but how and when is up to you, because I want it to be at a natural point in the meal. No one's ever going to come to your table and like list down specials or say, interrupt you at the wrong point to say, I have to tell you about this. Sorry. Like right now, you know, it has to feel genuine and warm. And so we really, really harp on that. And one of the other things that we do is we rarely ever hire any management from outside. We almost exclusively promote people internally. So anyone who's there in the restaurant managing knows what that experience is supposed to be like and is able to coach and guide the team to really continue in that consistent delivery of service.
Yeah. So, I mean, you mentioned that there are certain things that you want people to experience or, you know, have the servers kind of guide them to you, but what are a couple of those things? Like what should people be looking for?
Sure. I mean, one of the things that we do, honestly, I don't know how other Persian restaurants do it in Houston per se, but we serve like what we call sabzi. It's an herb platter with feta cheese and walnuts and radishes and a bunch of fresh herbs that comes as part of our bread service. So that hits a table of somebody who's never dined with us before. They have no idea what that is or what they're supposed to do with it. It's not that normal in American dining to eat herbs like by the handful just with hummus. So, part of the experience is explaining that plate and what's on it and how it's supposed to be eaten. Another one is the sumac that we bring to the table the little berry that's crushed and ground up. It's got a citrusy flavor. It gets brought to the table. And at some point, once the entrees hit, the server needs to explain what that spice is, what you're supposed to do with it, how you incorporate it into the rice. What does it go good on? We don't want you to sprinkle it on sweet rice because it won't go with that. We want you to sprinkle it on a savory rice or on the grilled meats. Those are kind of the two biggest things, like the biggest service points that are unique to our dining experience. And of course, all the standard stuff.
We don't leave the sumac on the table for that reason. We want the server to bring it to the table. As when you go to other Persian restaurants, it's already sitting on the table. By bringing it to the table, they have to explain what it is. We talk about, okay, you take your tomato, you crush it, you mix it with the white rice, you put a little bit of the sumac on it, you take the meat, you eat a bite, you could take a little bit of the sabzi plate, the herb, the tarragon or the basil, and eat it with that. Sometimes, you know, if people want to be adventurous, we tell them you can get some raw onions and eat some raw onions with it too. Or take an egg yolk and mix it with the white rice.
I mean, obviously you said that the first year has gone very well. So what are your goals as you kind of head into the, you know, you're most of the way into year two at this point? Like what kind of market do you see Houston as for the future of Rumi's?
I see it as a great market. I mean, we just introduced the brunch menu and it's been amazing. It's been a hit. We do about every Friday, Saturday, we do over 200 covers to 250, 300 for lunch, which it was a little bit slower. We didn't have that many people at lunches in those days. I don't know. We are looking for a second location in Houston, but we're opening Los Angeles next year. So we have to do a little bit more research. But so in Atlanta, everybody knows Rumi's Kitchen. And my goal is for Rumi's Kitchen to become a household name in Houston as well. You know, if you go to a doctor and you're Persian, they're going to ask you, have you been to Rumi's Kitchen? That's how popular we are.
That's got to feel good, right? From humble beginnings and maxing out your credit card to being staple of the city?
That is more than when I moved to Atlanta in 1995, I lived in a shelter. I had absolutely nothing, not even a dollar in my pocket. I just went and checked myself into a shelter to where we are today.
And I mean, you know, going to LA where you grew up and got your start, and a city that's known for its Persian restaurants. I mean, do you have to change anything to kind of knowing that you're going into a pretty competitive environment for Persian restaurants?
You know, what I always preach or tell the staff, if we do what we do, execute it correctly, we don't have to change anything. We will always try to elevate and get better. But majority of, I would say, like a lot of times I was like, let's stop. Let's just execute what we have perfectly. But just do what we do and do what we do in Houston. Just do it in LA. The design will be different. The restaurant will be bigger. But competition is good. Competition is what keeps you active, what keeps you going. If you have no competition, you're going to rest on your laurels, you know?
Yeah, I mean, Stephen, you know, talk about kind of your connection to Houston and kind of what you've observed about the restaurant since it's been open.
Look, Houston, in my perception, is three times bigger and three times wealthier than Atlanta. I've met more billionaires in the first month there than I've ever met in my entire life. So that's just, in a nutshell, the biggest difference. What I think is most important for us in the second year here is showing people that, look, you know, it's if you, the more money you have, the easier it is to do a lot of stuff. You know, we've grown a lot as a restaurant group, but we don't work any less hard than we worked at the beginning. And so it's very important for me that this second year, people see that it wasn't just a good opening and just a fluke. Now, this is consistent. The second you come in, Rumi's is maybe not even as good. Maybe it's even a little bit better than when they first opened. Maybe that it's even like getting a little bit better. The service is even like more on point. And it was great when they opened. We didn't even notice it was an opening. That's what I want the second year to be, is people are like, this is the real deal. These people really, really care, because they're not going to see Ali and me as much as they did when we first opened. It's just the reality. We visit all the restaurants. So we have to continue to impress and be consistent, because that is what will get the Houstonians to be lifelong fans of Rumi's Kitchen. It's not about the first year. It's about that lifelong relationship of them being like, this is the place we go because we can always count on them. The food always tastes great. And if and when they maybe make a mistake, because we're going to mess up. When we make a mistake, they make it right.
And then Ali, you mentioned brunch. So, I mean, nominally, that's what got me back into the restaurant and what kind of prompted this interview. So, like, is there a Persian brunch? Is that something that exists in Persian culture, or how did you adapt kind of brunch fare to the Persian palate?
I've been here since 1977 and I've never gone back to Iran. So I'm not sure if there's brunches, but my information in Iran is all on Instagram, what I see on food, but I do see some breakfasts and some stuff like that.
But I'm going to say biscuits and gravy are not a Persian dish.
Not if you put za'atar on it. or Dutch baby. When I moved to Atlanta, I learned about Dutch baby pancake, and that was my favorite. I'm like, how can I make that somehow Middle Eastern? I talked to Terry, and we became with some sour cherry stuff. But the Persian omelet, that's 100% Persian. We also have the clotted cream. That's a, you know, Persian. Olivia, yeah, that's 100% Persian.
Obviously, you're focused on Rumi's and growing that concept, but do you, I mean, do you ever aspire to like do another kind of restaurant or something different than Rumi's?
You know, every time I do that, my ex-wife and Steve think I'm going crazy, but yes, all the time. But then they bring me back. So I think about that, then they bring me back and put me back in Rumi's Kitchen. So between my ex-wife and Steven, they don't let me do that. But I do that all the time.
What's one thing, like, you know, obviously, again, like the focus is on Rumi's, but like what's on the wish list? Like what would you like to do?
I wanted to do an Israeli concept in Atlanta. You know, my partner Steven is Jewish. I wanted to do an Israeli concept. They didn't let me do it. At one time, I wanted to do a sushi. My then was my wife. She's like, Ali, what do you know about sushi? Are you kidding me? And of course, the person who opened the sushi restaurant, we were going to pardon up, he's very successful at it. Any food that tastes good, food that tastes good with the right ambience, with the right service, with the right point, you are going to be successful. You know, there are some restaurants that I go to and I'm blown away with service and the food. But the restaurants that I go to, I'm like, where is the service? Like, you're like non-existent. So I think people would really enjoy having great service, great food, great ambience.
What are a couple of the places in Houston you've been to that you really like?
My favorite place, it's a breakfast place. I posted it. I personally think it's the best brunch I've had anywhere. It's called, if I'm pronouncing it correct, Emma, E-M-A.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, absolutely.
I think hands down, best brunch I've ever had. Now, I love Mexican food. Maybe that's why I think that. But I didn't even know they had breakfast, but it was amazing. I went to another place. It's an Italian restaurant. What was it called, Stephen?
Cultivare.
Yeah, Cultivare. Yes.
Yeah, that was very good. That I enjoyed a lot. I went to a sushi restaurant. It took me an hour to find it. I almost lost my reservation. You had to go through a closing. N-E-O.
Oh, you went to Neo.
Yeah, you had to go through a clothing store to get in there. That was very good. I was very impressed. I'm always impressed with Uchi and Uchiko. They're my neighbors. I love them. They're great. Those are some of the restaurants that I went. There are very impressed with Papa's newest restaurant, Little.
Oh, yeah, Little's Oyster Bar, yeah. I mean, it sounds like you're really dining around. It sounds like you've gotten to know the city quite a bit.
Oh, yeah. Every time I come, I go to different restaurants, and then I go to some that I like a lot. I mean, I go to the brunch place every time I come back now. That one is a must.
That's a sharp choice. That's a kind of a hipster. Well, now it's a now it's got a Michelin Bib Gourmand, so maybe it's slightly less hipster. But yeah, that's a cool restaurant. You've done well.
Yeah,
I have to say that does bring me to the end of my questions. Is there anything I haven't asked you about that you want to discuss?
Not with me, Steve.
No, I don't think so. Just definitely want to tell you thank you, Eric, for all the support over the last couple of years. It's been great, you know, having you in the restaurant. We appreciate all the
thank you, Eric. You know,
all the honest feedback.
I mean, thank you. I mean, I've had several good meals at Rumi's, and it's, you know, there's always a little bit of skepticism whenever a restaurant comes in from out of town, but
yeah,
you know, I just as I said earlier, you know, just seeing my Persian friends embrace you, it's like, okay, they're clearly onto something. I mean, they're doing something right.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
All right. Well, you know, plug the website, plug the social media, let people know how they can keep in touch with Rumi's.
Yeah. So we take reservations on OpenTable, or you can book through our website at roomieskitchen.com. And please give us a follow on Instagram at Rumi's Kitchen Official.
Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Eric.
Thank you, Eric.
You can follow me on Instagram at Eric Sandler. Keep it locked on culturemap.com for all the latest Houston bar and restaurant news. Thanks so much for listening. I'll be back next week.